Welcome to ICOSA's Driving Force Radio, where we discover what drives today's leaders. Now, here's your host, Jan Mazzotti.
Good morning and welcome to Driving Force Radio, where we seek to discover what drives today's leaders. My co-host today is Steve McMillan, the editor of public policy at the Denver Post. Welcome to the show, Steve.
Hey, good to be here, Jan.
You know, Steve, this is going to be a fun show today. We're doing something a little bit different than we typically do on the Driving Force Radio show. And we're talking about music and art and its role in the community.
I mean, to me, summertime in Colorado is all about music. I mean, you got a chance to get up to Red Rocks, see Big Head Todd and the Monsters. You go out to Telluride to see the Bluegrass Festival. And today, we got a chance to talk to three real luminaries in the music scene. We have Harry Tuft, we have Tom Scharf, and we have Chris Daniels. And they're going to talk to us not only about music, but a little bit about how music brings people together. And if you think about it, music really is a universal language. And they're going to help us understand how come and why.
And it's going to be so much fun, so let's get started. Our first guest is Harry Tuft, the founder of the Denver Folklore Center, a legendary music store and performance venue that is celebrating its 50th anniversary this year. Welcome to the show, Harry.
Thank you very much.
And our next guest is Tom Scharf, the executive director of Swallow Hill Music Association, a nonprofit organization focused on promoting folk, acoustic, and roots music through its music school and concert hall, while building community. Welcome to the show, Tom.
Thank you for having me.
You bet.
Harry, the Folklore Center is celebrating its 50th anniversary this year. Tell us a little bit about the Folklore Center, how it got started, what its mission is.
Sure. I came out here in 1960 from the East, having been skiing back East and doing some musical performing. The skiing was really lousy outside of Philadelphia, where I'm from. The Pocono skiing in those days was almost non-existent. But so I came out here and did some singing and some skiing, and in the process was given the idea to open a store that was much like a shop in New York City in Greenwich Village called the Folklore Center, a place where it's a place to sell the materials around folk music, and parenthetically, although I didn't realize it at the time, a place for people who liked that kind of music to also congregate. My focus was on just starting a store where I could sell some stuff and kind of make a living, and I found a place on 17th Avenue that seemed to be close to downtown and appropriate for what I needed, and so I started up and would do Sunday what are called hoot nannies, that where people would come in, and it was a way to get people accustomed or get to know about the store and get a little bit of free publicity from things like the Denver Post, for instance, and that's how it started. You know, I didn't have a vision or a mission. I was a 27-year-old guy who was on a leave of absence from graduate school and thought that this was something to do. And actually, by that time, I realized that architecture and I were not going to make it. So I thought maybe this would be something that would work.
I so love that. And Tom, I wanted to come to you because we're here at the beautiful Swallow Hill facility here off of Broadway and Yale. And Swallow Hill and the Folklore Center are really intimately connected in so many ways. Can you talk about that a little bit and how you guys work together?
Sure. So one of the things that Harry didn't say is that artists that were traveling from the East Coast to the West or vice versa would stop into the Folklore Center, see what was going on. There was a larger community, a bead store, a record store. There was a cafe where people were doing live performances, but they were giving lessons there and they were doing shows. And some of these people would stop by, big names would stop by and do shows with Harry. And we grew up out of that. So in 1979, the folks at the Folklore Center parent and the originators of Swallow Hill decided that they should make this a nonprofit and that we could get underwriting for our school and that we could sell some memberships. So in 1979, we formed as a nonprofit. The Folklore Center still remained, and we grew up to what we are today. 33 years later, we're educating over 5,000 students and doing over 200 shows a year here at our venue and also outside of this venue.
Well, and so important in a time when you see education cutting the arts and music, and how important music and the arts are to really that whole growth of a human being. I mean, everybody loves music or art in some form or fashion. So it's great to have it here.
It's true, and we are in a world where things like art and music are being cut out of school curriculums, and we are in tough times, of course, now, and people are funding very worthy things in the human needs area, fighting disease and things like that. But I really believe that music is also a basic need, and we're proving it by the fact that more and more people come here all the time to get part of the community and to get this music in their soul. It's good for you.
Harry, back in 62, when you first got out here, started the Folklore Center, how did folk music fit into the Denver scene? I mean, I think, and Tom mentioned it, Greenwich Village, back in New York. I'm thinking Bob Dylan, Joan Baez, Dave Van Ronk. Mm-hmm. What about Denver? What was here? What was going on?
Well, when I got here, there was a bit of a folk scene. The fellow that gave me the idea to start the store was a fellow named Hal Neustetter, and he ran a club called the Exodus. It was actually what we call a 3-2 joint, which sold near beer, people would call it, 3-2 beer, and it was sort of in the basement of this hotel at 20th and Lincoln. And traveling musicians would be hired to play there. There was a kind of a coffee house circuit that they were a part of. As a matter of fact, tragically, Hal was killed in a plane crash, actually the night that I arrived here, coming back from an association of these clubs, club owners out of Oklahoma City. And at the time, Judy Collins had come from Denver, was living in New York, but was very popular here. There were people from the West Coast who would come and make this a part of their circuit as well. There were some local folks who were really great. Walt Conley was sort of at that time the best name, the best known folk person, who was an entertainer, played in a lot of the clubs. People like John Denver, Michael Johnson played at the lounges around here, and Walt did some booking. He was the first one to bring the Smothers Brothers here. So there was a couple of clubs that grew up. There were coffee houses, so there was a growing scene. It was bolstered by the fact that next door to the Folklore Center there was this coffee house, and it was a place I could use to bring people in until eventually when things went along and I actually took over the whole block and we did things out of our own concert hall. And as far as Swallow Hill, you know, the funny thing about it is that if you think about politics these days and think how much of it is based on economics, the start of Swallow Hill was really an economic base, because I realized the concert hall was losing a lot of money every year, and that's when I thought that to keep it alive, that if we made it a nonprofit and took in the benefits that a nonprofit can offer, then by doing that, it would survive. And so out of that economic base, it was able to survive, and thanks to some really dedicated people who carried it on for a lot of years that were pretty lean and required working out of small spaces. It got along until a point where there was kind of a critical mass in it. You know, it started to kind of arise.
And you were actually in
the Swallowville neighborhood, right? Isn't that where 17th Pearl? That was where the first store was.
Right. When it came to finding a name, there had been a story just about a month before in, I believe it was the Denver Post, that have you heard of that? That talked about this historic district that was had been called Swallow Hill, just like we have Bonnie Bray and other developments that, you know, and if for some reason it did not stick as a name, but we'd heard about it and read about it, so we thought, well, it's, we're in that area, we'll call it that. It basically, I think, ran from something like Colfax to 20th and Grant to Downing, so, you know, in that area.
Well, and Tom, Harry was just talking about the economic base of really spinning off Swallow Hill and making it its own nonprofit. So can you share a little bit about the history and the mission of the organization? And I know you've experienced growth over the last few years. Can you talk a little bit about that and what you're seeing there?
Sure. Well, I think what was true of the Folklore Center 50 years ago and what's true about Swallow Hill now is that we're building community through music, and it's a place for people to gather that are like-minded about the love for it. And when we promote from that angle, I think that's what makes it so special. And we have grown dramatically in the last 5-10 years. And as Harry says, it's really, we stand on the shoulders of a lot of people who have done it, who have made very little money, who have worked very hard promoting stuff. But it's about becoming, we're part now of a national network that brings in artists that people don't get to hear. Things like memberships and grants help subsidize those artists that wouldn't play otherwise and wouldn't be making a living if we didn't help them do that. But in recent years, we have grown outside of this building with our programming, and we've done some more what we call margin programming that's more profitable for us, that helps feed what's going inside this building. For example, we now produce the Denver Botanic Gardens summer concert series, our third year in a row now. And so we bring big national acts who have the same agents as some of the smaller guys. And so this network, we get them from the very beginning to the very top of the echelon. And things like that help us. We've taken our mission to the streets. We've doubled our outreach to K-12 kids that's underwritten by grants. And we've doubled our school, too. And I think in these downtimes, people, if they can't actually see concerts, you know, the $75 Rolling Stones concerts, they can come in and learn how to play by themselves, and they can join other people and do it in group lessons. And it's just it's all about community here, and I think that's why we're successful.
And I want to talk about the school for a second. Is it just aimed at young children at the K-12 age, or can a, like, I was just talking to Steve before the show, I've always wanted to learn to play the drums. I know how to play classical violin, but I don't know how to play the drums. Can you teach me how to play the drums?
We can teach you how to play the drums. We can teach you to play a whole kit, a rock kit, or we can teach you how to play congas. We've got them all here, so come on by.
So it's for all ages.
It is for all ages, and funny enough, over 75% of our students are adults. So they're the folks who were watching Ed Sullivan. They're watching Elvis Presley and the Beatles and say, I want to do that one day.
Yeah.
And today's that day. So they're all back here, and they're learning. And it's the alternative to going to the bar. They meet their friends here, and they play music together. It's great. And we have lots of programs for little kids, too, which is great because they're going to be the adults of the future who are going to be carrying this tradition on.
So
it's really neat to have folks come here and into the shop who were the kids in the early days who fell asleep on the floor while their parents listened to the folk music that was being made at the time. Now they're bringing their kids in to rent guitars or instruments, you know, to come and take lessons here, and they're bringing their kids to sleep there. So it's, you know, it's just it's a wonderful thing.
Come full circle.
Yeah.
Do the Hootenannies take place at the Folklore Center? To me, that's community. You're bringing people to get in to sit down and sing together.
Sure. I do in the winter what I call an old-fashioned hootenanny here first Friday of the month. And it's really what we call an open stage or an open mic that I host and MC. But we encourage people to do songs that are familiar if they'd like to. And then at the shop itself, I do during the year on Monday nights from 7 to 9, I do what I call a song circle. And again, it's not necessarily a sing-alongish kind of thing. It could be. It depends on what somebody brings. And Tom has come, and Tom's a great songwriter and has shared some of his songs with us. And I wanted to mention something. You know, during the year, I do this Friday night, First Friday, Hootenanny. And because of it, I don't get to go to First Friday events that are art associated, but I don't do that in July and August. So last night was First Friday, and a very dear friend, Dan Fong, had a gallery opening down on Santa Fe at 7th and Santa Fe. So I went down to do that, and I was blown away by the amount of art and music and the number of people who were there. It seemed like every gallery had music going. And there was music outside. I mean, just music all over the place and art all over the place and just tons of people. And I think it just shows what a vibrant city Denver has become in art and music. And it just knocked me out.
By the way, Harry, tell them the steep price of the Hootenanny. Tell them what that costs.
Oh, yeah. We're pretty proud of our product. So it's either it's $3 pay or play. So if you want to play, you don't have to. You can pay for your admission by playing, and it's a one song set, because we get so many folks who come who want to play. We have somewhere between 20 and 25 people who come.
Sometimes you can bring a can of food, and that's we've done that.
And we've done that too. Yes, right.
So that's how we've survived over the years. The $3 pay or play model.
Yes.
Well, and Harry, you've been talking about this rich art and music scene that's going on all over town. And Tom, the music scene's changed, obviously, here in Colorado over time and over the years. How have things affected Swallow Hill? Because it sounds like you guys are working in your own little circle and doing, you know, still really influencing the way things are going here in Colorado.
Denver's a really interesting market for music. I like to believe that we're nipping on the heels of Austin for being a really vibrant city. We're interesting with our geography being in the middle of the country. A lot of people are traveling up the coast, so to get somebody in the interior here takes a little effort. It's like working a puzzle. But I think there's a lot of increased competition here, but I think Swallow Hill's the better for it. We've always had a niche in folk and acoustic music, but we present genres that are wider than that. And think about like unplugged sets that were popular on MTV
right.
a long time ago. We can bring rock acts in here and subdue them. So it's about opening your mind. It's about the folk part of it for us is about folks getting together. So I think it's really grown for us in a lot of ways. And Swallow Hill's richer for it. The other thing I would mention is that Swallow Hill is very unique as an institution compared to others in the country. There's the Old Town School of Folk Music in Chicago, which is the largest, and then there's us, and then there's a few other across the country, but we're really unique for this city, and I think people are really realizing what a gem it is.
Well, and it is really unique because we're here at Swallow Hill, and it's a renovated church, and you're preparing for concerts in all kinds of places tonight and events going on, so you can hear people coming in, and you can hear the music, and you can hear people warming up and getting ready to go, and it's just bustling in here.
I wanted
energy.
To mention something that also it happens that this weekend is the weekend of the Underground Music Showcase, which I believe is also sponsored by the Denver Post.
Right, it is.
And if you take a look at the roster of the people who are playing, the number of folks who are acoustically based, who many of whom may have taken lessons here, know about here, have come to open stages here, and to have that much acoustic music as a part of an underground music scene is really, I think, it's a great thing. And I think it's a real tribute to Swallow Hill.
We have three stages here. I like to compare them to an eagle catching a thermal. We have one in the basement, the 65-seater. We have a 100-seater right over here, named after Harry. It's called Tough Theater. And then we have Daniels Hall, named after Chris Daniels' family, who made a really nice gift to help get us in this building. But you can start in the basement. We're enablers here. And you can start there at any number of open mics. School graduations happen there. You get good, you sell some tickets, you go up to Tough Theater, and you get really big, and you go over to Daniels Hall, and then you're up and out of here. But the stars never forget us. They always come back.
I love that.
We were talking about acoustic music, Harry. You've got a band that you've played in for a long time called Grubstick. So do you have a favorite story about a gig or a performance that you'd be willing to share with us?
Gosh, you put me on the spot. I'll be honest with you, I'm not sure I really do. We've been together over 40 years now, and I think part of the secret of success is that we're not a working band, and we get together as much out of the enjoyment of being friends. So preparing for a concert is as much fun as doing the concert, really. I wouldn't say that we've really experienced a whole lot of different venues. We've had a bit of success. We've gone up to the Winnipeg Folk Festival. We've done things around the state as well. I don't think any great catastrophes or... I guess the most enjoyable things that we've done... I've known Chuck Morris for a long time, and he had Grubstake from the very first venue that he had, which was Tulagi in Boulder. And so every time he got a different venue, he would ask us to come and play. So he had us at Red Rocks, and we opened for Willie Nelson and the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band. And,
wow.
And that's about as good of
you cannot do that.
Harry's got a new CD out too, what these guys played on, in addition to Judy Collins was on it, Tim O'Brien, Nick Forrester, Molly O'Brien, some really great people. It's called Treasures Untold. It is a beautiful album. Many years in coming.
Yes, right. About 30
that's
years
a highlight for me, those guys playing on that and those folks. It's a great CD.
For me, with Swallow Hill, in some respects, and Tom, maybe you could address this, but I mean, the fact that you guys are booking Botanic Gardens, both out at the actual site of Botanic and at Chatfield down south, was a real breakthrough. I mean, can you, how did that come about, and what's that meant for Swallow Hill? It feels like it's amped it up a notch or two.
It has, in fact, you know, as a result of our presence there, we've seen our school programs grow, and we've seen our concert attendance grow with familiar faces that we see at the Botanic Gardens. But it came about, you know, as there was a change of changing of the guard from the old promoters, and they liked our programming sensibilities. It's of course in a dense urban neighborhood, and we were kind of our music is kind of hip, and so we brought that sensibility to that neighborhood, and I think the really important thing to them is it fit their mission. There were two nonprofits getting together, and so the money that comes from that feeds these things. It helps grow flowers, and it helps grow guitar players, and that felt great for both of us.
I love that, and that the collaboration that's going on with these two organizations. Harry, we only have a few more minutes, and like Steve said at the beginning, you guys are celebrating your 50th anniversary. What's in store for the next 50 years, Harry? What can we expect from you guys?
Well, I think that I have, the Swallow Hill grew out of the Folklore Center. There is a store that is included in the Old Town School of Folk Music in Chicago, and for me, it would be not only appropriate, but really sweet if there were a way that the Folklore Center could return and be incorporated into Swallow Hill, either in a renovated existing space or in a new, as part of a new building, if that should come about. And I'm personally looking forward to a time when I can do more of my music and turn over some of the day-to-day working of the store to others. I don't know how many more years I'll be able to croak out a song, but I'm going to try to do it.
He's going to outlive me, I promise.
So what about the next 5 years for Swallow Hill, Tom?
Well, I would agree with Harry. It would be nice to see both these organizations merged again. Frankly, in this space that we're in, we're 22,000 square feet. We're out of room. We've doubled in the last 5 years, both our patronage and school and concert. We're busting at the seams, and we love this old building. But we can't go up, and we can't go out. And so I think our future is going to be about relocating somewhere. We have a gift from Dear Departed board member named Jeff Quinlan that's going to help get us started on that path, but we'll need the rest of the community to come together, as they always have, to bring us into a new Swallow Hill, and we'll have that same blue jeans feel. We won't be brass and glass, it'll be wooden fern.
And Tom, tell us, where can people learn more about the lessons and the concerts going on at Swallow Hill?
We'd love if you come to visit us at 71 East Yale, but a great way to get an idea where we are is to look up www.swallowhillmusic.org.
Okay, and Harry, you have the new CD out. What's it called, and where can people get that?
It's called Treasures Untold by Harry Tufte and Friends. It can be certainly purchased at the Denver Folklore Center, or you can get it online at harrytuft.com.
And I have to ask, how do you find out where to come to a Hootenanny on the first Friday of every month?
Through Swallow Hill. It is a Swallow Hill production.
So it's swallowhill.org.
Swallowhillmusic.org.
Swallowhillmusic.org.
Yes.
Harry, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Tom, thank you so much for being with us.
My pleasure. Thanks for coming to Swallow Hill.
That was fun.
That was a lot of fun.
That was a lot of fun. Don't go anywhere. When we come back, we'll have more with this conversation about how music really does build community with Chris Daniels. Driving Force Radio. I'm Jan Mazzotti. My co-host today is Steve McMillan, the editor of public policy at the Denver Post. Welcome to the show, Steve.
Great to be here, Jan.
You know, Steve, we are going to continue this fantastic show about music and art and community building and the importance of music and art to our communities. And this next guest is absolutely fantastic.
If you live in Colorado, you know about Chris Daniels and the Kinks. I was walking down the 16th Street Mall after work one day, and there was a stage set up at the pavilions, and on that stage, there's Chris and the Kinks playing. You go up to Little Bear at Evergreen, and you're going to see Chris Daniels and the Kinks. Chris is truly an iconic figure on the music scene.
And not just here in Denver, but he's toured all over the world. He's a former executive director of Swallow Hill Music, a songwriter, record producer, and the cool thing, an assistant professor at the University of Colorado Denver's College of Arts and Media. Welcome to the show, Mr. Daniels.
Thank you. It's great to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
Chris, an hour from now, or 15 minutes from now, you're going to go out to a full house in Daniels Hall, and you're going to play your CD release concert for this new CD, Better Days.
That's right.
What's the impetus for this project?
Oh, boy, there's a lot. I started out as an acoustic musician living in old Minnesota, don't you know, right? So I was born up there, and then my dad was from my mom was from South Carolina, so they lived on each side. So I spent a lot of time going back and forth, but a while back, about 2 years ago, I was teaching. I didn't feel very good, and went into the doctor's office, and they said, well, you know, you're fine, but your blood's really bad. And sad story, but very shortly, I was diagnosed with acute myeloid leukemia, AML, which is a monster. And so I went through an amazing process of chemo and other stuff, and I got a bone marrow transplant via stem cells from my sister. And it's allowed me to be here for 2 years since I was diagnosed, which is pretty amazing. My initial diagnosis had a 10% chance of survival. So when I got out, one of the things that I wanted to do, I did a lot of songwriting in the hospital, but also I wanted to go back to the roots of what I started out doing, which was acoustic music. When I was executive director here at Swallow Hill, it was a wonderful 5 years of being here and being just inundated and surrounded and with all of this amazing acoustic music. And it was like going back to school. I learned about new stuff and, you know, these great players. Ernie Martinez will be playing tonight. Ernie Martinez is one of the most gifted players, and he's a teacher here at Swallow Hill. And so it was like going back to school, you know, but obviously I had other duties. So for me, Better Days is both looking forward and and looking back. And the image we used is an old truck that's sitting out front, an old 51 Chevy that I got when I was 17 years old. And I lost it a few times in my, you know, bad years. You know, the city would tow it away, and I'd have to buy. I bought it three times, basically. But, you know, and it's sort of fixed up now. And Willie Matthews, who does artwork for Telluride and all these wonderful, he did the artwork, and then Greg Carr did the rendering of the package. And what's so fun is it's all about how you interpret it. Because for some people, better days are in the past. That's the way they think of life. And, you know, for others, it's straight ahead future. My students, it's all about tomorrow. What am I going to do tomorrow? And that's what their future is. So it's really up to who, however you interpret it. But it's an acoustic record, which is a real break from the Kings, as you know, which is a Blood, Sweat, and Tears horn band.
Yeah, yeah. Chris, you know, and this is a solo project too, but you have a lot of friends that you've worked with over the years, working with you on the album, and well-known musicians from all over the world. Can you talk a little bit about some of those artists and what they're bringing and the relationships and the specialness of that?
Sure, yeah. Basically what happened is my son, Cedar, said, you know, Pop, before you check out here, I really want to have you. My favorite thing is when just you play an acoustic guitar. So it started out from that. When I got back, I wasn't, you know, you're not feeling all that great. You've just been walloped by chemo and all this stuff. But my dear good friend Jim Ratz, who has a little studio just across the way, I would go in there on the days when I was feeling good, and I'd take the acoustic guitar and I'd lay down a track and I'd sing a vocal. And Ernie was the first. Martinez came along and said, well, you know, he's that funny sort of way. He said, Chris, why don't I put a little mandolin part in here? So he put on, and then Sam Bush, who was, you know, the founder of Newgrass music, Chris Seeley and all the amazing, you know, eruption of this jam band and incredible Newgrass sound really comes from Newgrass Revival. And Sam's been a friend for years, since the 70s, and what he did when I was sick is he would call me up, because he's been through cancer stuff too. And so he'd say, oh man, are you having chemo dreams yet? And I'd say, oh yeah, I'm having chemo dreams, and all this stuff. And so Sam was just a great supporter, so he was passing through, and I said, man, you know, would you be interested in? And he said, of course, of course. So he came in and did all kinds of fiddle and mandolin parts, and then I saw Richie Fure, who's an old friend from Poco and Buffalo Springfield, and Richie said, yeah, I'd love to put on a part. Kenny Passarelli, who's, you know, played bass with Elton John for all these years, and Kenny said, oh, I'd love to be part of this. And that's how it grew. It was really a community of musicians who basically said, we'd like to be a part of this. It was just stunning. It's a huge honor. So
can you give us, tell us about the start of the Chris Daniels and the Kings.
Oh, that's a fun story. It was supposed to be one night gig. Be careful of one night stands. Literally, we were going to put it together. I was touring with a guy named Russell Smith, who is amazing rhythm aces, and their big song was Third Rate Romance, Low Rent Rendezvous. So I'm touring with Russell, and Russell decides he's just going to write songs. He's going to live in Nashville and write songs. He wants to get out of the road. We had this smoking hot band, and I said, well, Russell, let's do that. And I borrowed some horns, a horn section from my good friend Steve Kahn, another amazing musician, toured with Bonnie Raitt and all this stuff. And so I borrowed his horn section. So for one night at the Blue Note in Boulder, Colorado, we were going to do a show and doing horn band music, old Stax Volt, all of this, you know, great stuff from, you know, the 1960s and that great sound. And so we did it one night, and people flipped out and we love it. So 28 years later, 12 albums later, 18 European tours later. And it's just because it's so much fun. There's a wonderful guy named Big Al, who was the Wolfman Jack of Holland. And he had this voice talking like Greece, and you pronounce my name like Greece, like Greece. How are you doing? And we'd do these radio shows, and he loved Tower of Power. We came along, and he just did all this stuff, and he said, "This is music for the happy few," and it's true. It's for those people. You know, I mean, some people love the Sturm und Drang. You know, the oh, I feel terrible, and all that stuff. And that's important music. You know, it's important to have dark, you know, thoughtful, intense, but it's also part of the party, and that's what the Kings is about. It's a party.
What's it like
playing with B.B. King, Sheryl Crow, Blues Traveler. You've been on the stage with these guys.
Yeah, well, I mean, I've been blessed. I've been really blessed. The probably the most amazing thing that happened to me was realizing what good people they are. Sam Bush is just an iconic figure in bluegrass. He's one of the nicest people you'll know. B.B. King was so sweet and so nice. And, you know, he'd come up and he'd say, that was Chris Daniels and the Kings opening the show. And, you know, man, he's one of the originals. We used to back Bo Diddley on all these shows and touring around. And it was really funny because Bo would do these wonderful things where he would, you know, say, it's such a pleasure playing with Chris Daniels and the Kings. And so that's what I found, is that really good musicians tend to be incredibly nice people. Not all, you know. There's some SOBs and jerks out there, but, you know. That's been my experience.
Well, and you have got to have some amazing stories.
Oh, yeah.
From some of these shows.
Oh,
can
yeah.
Can you share one or two?
Oh, Lord.
With us, just those favorites.
Well, there's a very fun story. Dan Tomitzky, who plays guitar for Alison Krauss, and he's marvelous, and he was asked to do the O Brother, Where Art Thou? And he said, well, okay. And T-Bone Burnett called him. And so he went out and he learned it. You know, I am a man of constant sorrow. And he learned it. And he got the phone there and he played it for T-Bone Burnett. And T-Bone said, that's great. It's perfect. That's exactly the sound I'm looking for. So this is great. And so you got the gigs. You're not going to really be seen on screen. It'll just be hearing your voice. And so that's okay, man. I'm glad to have the gig. To work with T-Bone is great. He called his wife and he said, so the good news is that I got the gig and, you know, I'm going to be singing on the record. The bad news is it'll be my voice coming out of George Clooney. There was this little silence, and his wife said, kind of always dreamed about that. So, it's just, you know, like I said, these people are really fun, interesting people. I actually took a banjo lesson from Pete Wernick yesterday. And Dr. Banjo is, I mean, literally the guy that knows more about Scruggs style than anybody. He had more wonderful stories about Earl Scruggs, and I'd only met him one time. We'd done one show together, and it was actually fairly prophetic. His banjo had gotten a crack in it, and so he was going to borrow my banjo, but he's so used to his, and he played mine. He said, yeah, this will, and he was really mild. He said, yes, sir, those will work fine. And then he sort of worked around with his for a while, and he got it to work. And so, you know, my banjo got played a little bit by Earl Scruggs, but what a nice guy.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Very cool.
You're a songwriter.
Yes, sir.
You've got 10 or 12 CDs out.
Yes, sir.
Do you have a favorite song or several favorite songs? Do you have a favorite CD?
You know, like most artists, this is the favorite CD. It's the newest one that you're working on, and actually I'm thinking about the next one. But songwriting is a funny thing. One of the things about songwriting that is really hard is to get that moment where you tell the truth. And you tell the truth, for me, it's about something personal, you know. And if you tell the truth about something personal and it becomes universal, that's what's that magic. I mean, you know, Tom Jorden, Radiohead, you know, I'm a creep. I mean, nobody'd ever said I love you any, you know, in a cooler, weirder, more wonderful way. You know, same thing. I mean, You're So Vain. The reason You're So Vain works as a song is because she's still in love with the guy. And once you realize that, the song all of a sudden is haunted. You know, it's not just, oh, you're so vain. It's like, she still cares for this guy. That's why she's pissed. So for me, one of the ones that I did is a song called I Still Think of You. And it's a really simple lyric. It's just, I still think of you in my quiet moments. I still think of you, but I hardly get the chance to notice anymore. And all of us have that moment when all of a sudden things, the hubbub of, you know, internet texting, my God, I have to do tweeting, I have to tweet today, you know, and it sort of calms down. And all of a sudden you're sitting there and some flavor, a smell of a flower or whatever it happens to be, a painting that you're looking at, reminds you of somebody that was important in your life. And for just that moment, you're with them again. And I captured that in a song. So to me, that's the kind of thing that's magic, when you do that, when you just write about something that's really personal and then it's universal.
Well, Chris, you have so many projects on your hands between Swallow Hills and the new CD and all of that. Talk about what you do as an assistant professor over at UCA. That's got to be a totally different gig, too.
Well, what happened was, when I was at Swallow Hill, what I realized that is, as good as I was at fundraising and running an organization and growing a business and all the things that I knew how to do, where my passion lay was with teaching. And so I was making it possible at Swallow Hill for these teachers to do what they did, but I realized, God, I really want to teach. So I got involved with teaching just down the road at Arapahoe Community College. I stopped by and said, you don't need anybody to teach a little guitar? And they said, yeah, you know, can you start tomorrow? And I said, great. So that got me in, and then I arrived and they said, but can you teach music theory? I said, yeah, I can do that. And they said, well, how about, how about a history of jazz class? And then how about on recording class and music business class? So that built it up, and I got a reputation for doing that. And from there, what happened was CU heard about what I was doing, and they said, we'd like you to come teach. And I said, I'd love to. I mean, I always wanted to teach at CU. And I started teaching music business there. And then they asked me to become a full-time assistant professor there. And I said, what an honor. I'd love to. So I'm an assistant professor for music business at the University of Colorado College of Arts and Media in the Music and Entertainment Studies Industries Department. So
that would take a lot to do.
Yeah. But what it means is that I work with really amazing young talent, and I'm working with them really to focus on this idea of, if you're going to survive now in the music business, it's completely different than it was 10 years ago, even 5 years ago. For me, the laboratory is putting out this new album. The last album I did was 2008, and in that album in 2008, distribution was one thing. MySpace was still going on. Now it's Facebook. Twitter was just coming in. Twitter is now huge. You know, 5 years from now, it'll be different. Then distribution was important. Now distribution is much less important, physical, but there's some great new outlets. We're being distributed around the country by a thing called SIMS, which is the Coalition of Independent Music Stores. So it's all the twists and shouts and Electric Fetus in Minnesota and all of that. So I take that, what I learned, it's like a laboratory, and I take it back into the classroom and I say, okay, here's what I've learned. Let's see what you've learned, because they're out there, you know, living in a virtual world, and let's talk about this. So to me, it's really exciting. And we've had, you know, we've had the Fray come out of that program, and the Flowbots, and who else is brand new band Air Dubai, just signed with Red House Management. Those guys were all in my classes. They all took my classes. So it's not the Fray. They were before me. That's what I love. I love working with young talent, and there's great new music coming out. I know I have some wonderful old fuddy-duddy farts friends that are, you know, going, there's nothing good anymore. You know, it's like, no, you don't understand. There really is. The other thing that I've been able to do, and this just happened, I'm really excited about it. Barry Fay from Feline Concerts is an old friend, and Barry had 120 boxes of amazing, every single contract. I mean, the Who contracts that were this thick, literally this thick, you know, somewhere around 350 pages. So he needed a home for it. So I put together CU's library in Denver with the Barry Fay collection. So that's now coming together. That's two or three doctorate theses right there, plus a whole lot of, you know, articles. I mean, it's just amazing what's in that. So that's the other thing. I've been able to use my connections in the community to help the college.
And you've been nominated for the Colorado Music Hall of Fame, right?
Yeah.
Judy Collins, Nitty Gritty Dirt Band.
Yeah, you guys pretty good company.
Not very good company. That's quite an honor.
Yeah. I think what I represent with that, what I represent in that pantheon of people is people like Harry Tuft. You know, Harry never had a number one record. I never had a number one record. But what we've done as part of the community, I mean, Harry to me is a god. He's done so much for this community. And to be included with someone like Harry, that's, I mean, obviously Judy Collins, wow. But Harry's, and he's a brilliant musician, his newer record's great. So that's to me what is the honor is that's where I fit in. I'm never going to be, you know, One Republic or The Fray, you know. But to be honored as part of a community has done some good stuff, that's pretty phenomenal.
Well, Chris, I know you have to get back with the show.
Go Tune My Guitar.
And the launch of your new Better Days CD is
right.
Coming out. Where can listeners learn more or get a copy of Better Days?
Well, you can go to www.chrisdaniels.com. Very easy, you can do that. Or it will be up on all of the typical places, Amazon.com and iTunes. That'll be in about a week. And we're on July 7th, so somewhere around the 17th. But it's also going to be available in all the great independent record stores, Twist and Shout, which Paul and Jill, it's for those people that love the physical product, it's really fun. And so it'll be available there, it'll be available in all the, you know, those kinds of stores across the country where music lovers go to get music.
I hope it's okay if I say this, but as someone who's come through leukemia, go to bonfies.org and learn more about being a donor.
Yeah, I would put in a really big plea for that. One of the most important things you can do is you can save a life. My sister saved my life. However much I get, it doesn't matter. She saved my life, and it's a blood transfusion. That's all it is. You're not giving up an eye or a liver. It's not surgery. It's a blood transfusion. It's easy to do. You can get on the National Registry with just a swab in your cheek, and you'll save somebody's life.
Be a donor. Bonfies.org or bethematch.org.
Right.
Chris Daniels, thanks so much. I can't wait to hear this music tonight.
Well, thank you so much. Thanks very much.
All right. Stevie Millen, as always, fantastic show.
Great to be here.
Steve's fantastic. Steve, thanks so very much.
Absolutely.
All right. Thanks so much. And thank you so much for joining us this week for Driving Force Radio. Have a great weekend.
Fell in love too soon. What are you gonna do? Feels like a train leaving town, trying to put your ticket down. Turn your life around. But there's better days coming your way. I can hear them as clear as this guitar that I play. Sure as the snow flies, you're gonna dry your eyes. Winter time will take you, shape and remake you. It's gonna be a whole lot better. Spring arrives. I've been working overtime, and I had a lot on my mind, and I've been edgy, I anger easily. Some friends been worrying about me, but there's better days coming my way. I can hear them as clear as this guitar that I play. Sure as snow flies, I'm gonna dry my eyes. Winter time will take me in my shape and remake me. It's gonna be a whole lot.
all in our window. Guess it's time that I should go. You don't need me, I'm gonna need you so. We both been through this before. Now there's better days coming our way, yeah. I can hear this clear. Is this guitar that I play? Sure as the sun shines, oh, there's gonna be good times. Winter time will take us, shape and make us. Gonna be a whole lot better. Spring arrives.
When you are overwhelmed by credit card debt, it impacts your entire life. Wouldn't you love to get that problem solved once and for all? Well, you can. If you're struggling with paying your credit card debt, there's a special program available only through credit counseling agencies. If you qualify, your minimum payments would drop significantly, and your interest rates in some cases would be completely eliminated, and you will have peace of mind. Family Financial Education Foundation is now authorized to offer this incredible program. Call now, 866-684-5060, to see if you qualify. This is serious payment and interest rate relief offered through the IRS-approved nonprofit Family Financial Education Foundation. For over 18 years, they've helped thousands of people just like you who need help getting out from under a pile of debt. Call now, 866-684-5060. 866-684-5060. Not available in all states.